Once again in Macedonia and see very familiar faces, and such a joy to see some that were a little bit unexpected, although somewhere I'd just forgotten or knew. A real pleasure to see my good brother good friend, Brother Jonas Proctor, who I've met several times down at Metter, Georgia, when I've gone and visited down there. Brother Jonas, remember, an old brother in the Metter Church down there at Rosemary, Brother Homer Lanier, who has gone on to be with the Lord and kind of left us here. But Brother Homer once, when I was down there, came up to me and said, Brother Coy, we don't have a song leader today. Do you lead singing? And I said, well, if called upon, I can lead singing, but here's the deal, Brother Homer. The way my voice is, if I leave singing, there will be no preaching today, because that's all I'll be able to do. My voice will be gone after I leave. But on the other hand, if you can find someone to lead singing, I guarantee you I can preach 2 hours nonstop. And he didn't know what to do with that. But I do enjoy being here. I'm going to try to be very mindful of the time and stuff. But something that has been on my mind for the past week or so, follow some discussions. Always, you know, when preachers have discussions, it stirs you up and you think of things and go back and even look at things that you may have read and studied before, just to kind of reiterate those things. And I always think it's very positive for God's people to be reminded over and over and over about the things of God. And to that end, I remember in Proverbs chapter 23, I believe it's verse 23, where Solomon tells us to buy the truth and sell it not. Also, wisdom, instruction, and understanding. But he tells us, buy the truth and sell it not, which is an interesting business principle. Because if you're in business and you buy and sell, you want to buy low and sell high. And if you're in business and you don't understand that principle, you're not going to be in business very long. Because if you buy high and sell low, you're going to lose your shirt and everything you got. And certainly there's a biblical principle in that, how to do that correctly. But in this particular verse, he tells us about something that we're to buy and never sell. He says, buy the truth and sell it not. Now, to that end, I would like to talk about some things that we know, things that are true in the Bible that sometimes many of us, oh yeah, I knew that, I know that, but the Bible tells us we know these things. These things are factual. These are the things you can sink your teeth into, you can take to the bank, you can live your life by these things. These are things that we know that are common knowledge, you would think, but I'd be willing to bet that there might be some here today, and I certainly know there are many out there in the world, the children of God, that don't know these things, even though we take them for granted each and every day. And I'll tell you, there's some simple things the Bible tells us we know. For example, over in 1 Corinthians, I believe it's chapter 8, it says, now concerning those things eaten that are sacrificed to idols, we know, here's something we know an idol is nothing in the world. That's something we know. Paul tells the church at Corinth, this is something we know. This is not disputable, it's just a fact, just the way things are. Now, no matter what you might perceive or what you might believe, that's a different story, but we know factually that an idol is nothing. That's a pretty easy thing to know. We know that, but you'd be surprised about the children of God who are very superstitious in their lives, who don't know that. They don't know that an idol is nothing. And that's what Paul was even trying to tell the church at Corinth, to be very merciful with those folks, to be very careful with those folks as they come to a better understanding, to know that an idol has no power over them. An idol is nothing, and therefore any meats that were sacrificed to an idol, if you want to buy them and grill them up and enjoy it, go forward and thank the Lord as you do it. That's what he's trying to tell you. An idol is nothing. It has no power whatsoever in this world. Idols are nothing. That's something that's easy to know. Well, there's a few others that might not be as easy to know. And I'm going to work through these kind of quickly so I can be a little bit mindful of time. Over in Romans chapter 3. Let's turn over there. Chapter 3 and verse 19. Let's read something that we know. In verse 19 it says, now we know that whatsoever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law shall no flesh be justified in his sight. We know that whatsoever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. We know that. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, you're thinking, well, yeah, I sort of know that, but what does that mean? Paul is just trying to tell you very simply that if you want to live your life by the law of Moses or by any legalistic system you can come up with, because at the time he wrote this, there was two or three different laws that you could live your life by. There was the pure law of Moses, which there were Jews that tried to adhere to that, and that was the given Old Testament way of worshiping God, and it was brutal. There was the made-up law of Moses, and that's what the majority of the Jews at that time were worshiping under, which many of the rules and regulations and commandments were never found in Scripture. That's the Pharisees and the Sadducees and those that were the Jewish leadership, they just made stuff up over the years. And that was the vast majority of folks. Believe it or not, in Christianity today, The way that we worship, what is given to us in the Bible, I guarantee you there's been leaders, ministers among the Christian faith throughout the world, among all denominations, just make stuff up. They just make things up, and the vast majority of the Christian world follows that. That's just the way it is. But there are always, as it was even at that time, there were Jews that adhered strictly to the law. God bless them for doing that. But Paul's saying that you're subject to that. If you want to live your life by some legalistic system, more power to you, you're under that. But for me, I'm not under the law. That's what Paul's trying to tell folks. I am no longer a subject of that law. I am no longer required to follow all those commandments and sacrifices, all the things that can be done in the temple, all the different cleansing and burning and things like that, the observance of all those things. I am no longer required. I am freed from that law. Okay? But why was that law given in the first place? Because like I said, that was the authorized method of worship in the Old Testament. You know, we often talk about in the New Testament, what's the authorized method of worship? And we know that our Bible tells us that we're instructed to sing, praising the Lord. We're to pray unto the Lord diligently, and we're to preach. And that's pretty much it. Those three things are pretty much just about it. That's all the New Testament church was really authorized to do as far as their worship. God wanted to simplify things down to three simple things. And if you can't get that right, then you do not need to have a come to Jesus meeting. You know, so Jesus can instruct you a little bit about, look, I don't want all the fancy stuff. I don't want all the ceremony and pomp and circumstance. I don't need that because I did that myself. I'm all the pomp and circumstance that you need in your life. And that's just me. So if you'll just center everything around, singing about me, praying in my name, and preaching about me, then that's all you do. Just keep it simple. And that's why in the 2 Corinthians letter, chapter 11, Paul says that he was worried that you might be removed from the simplicity, which is in Christ. Because the worship of Christ is a very simple worship. And he wants it that way for a reason. That way it's hard for us to mess it up. And we keep it simple, right? So, he says in this verse, we know that whatsoever the law saith, it saith to them that are under the law. Now, I've made that statement that we are no longer under the law. We're no longer required to do those things. However, I guarantee you that there are people sitting here today that live their life by some legal system. Here's how I know that. Because you're constantly living for approval from God. You're constantly trying to do things. You're constantly in your mind. I know because I do the same thing myself. Don't kid yourself. And don't try to tell a sinner that he didn't know how to sin. Because I do. I know what that's like. In my mind, when I go through some of those really, really bad weeks, and I think I have not gained the approval of my Heavenly Father this week. I am not acceptable in His sight. I have not done the things I ought to do. Because I know, and if you know me, you know I'm kind of OCD anyway. Obsessive compulsive. So, you know, I make lists, you know, so I might make a list, you know, at the beginning of the week of things that I need to do. And I don't mean just, you know, like, you know, go fill up the car. I mean things like don't be so hateful. Don't be so reactionary to folks. Use a kind word. In the mornings when I'm barely woke up and I get to my office and stuff, and I really haven't had my coffee working yet. And so I'm kind of grouchy and grumbly. Well, I make a note to myself, don't do that. Go ahead, put a smile on my face, open up my eyes, take a deep breath, and the first person I say, good morning, how you doing? Isn't it a great day? You know, those kind of things. I'm not that kind of person. I'm not a touchy and feely person. I don't like people. As a general rule, I don't like people. I'm not a people person. I don't hold that back one bit. I am not a people person. Okay? But the Lord Himself says, yeah, but I am. Jesus Christ says, I am a people person, and you will be too. If you're going to be following me, and you're going to be living your life according to the way I have led the way, then you're going to be a people person too. Because the only thing that matters to Jesus Christ in this universe is His people. Get that? Is Jesus Christ a tree hugger? No, He is not. Does He conserve the oceans? No. How do I know that? Because when He comes back, He's going to burn it all up anyway. He's going to get rid of everything. You worry about oil spills? There won't be an oil spill or oil slick left when He's done with it. See that? The only thing He's concerned about when He comes back is you. That is all He's concerned about, to get what He paid for. He did not buy this planet Earth. He did not buy the stars. He did not buy the moon. He did not buy the oceans. He did not buy the animals in the ocean. He did not buy those things. He bought you. And that's what he's concerned with. So I live my life not in that perspective usually. I live my life on a daily basis thinking about how I am not acceptable for God because I didn't meet all the criteria that I laid out. Because I guarantee you, I can write all that stuff down, and by Monday about 9:30, about half of them, I say, well, missed that. And, I just pull an X there. Didn't do that. Because I live my life by the law. I've made up a law for myself. See that? That's what I do. I'm legalistic on myself. I'm hard on myself that way. You know what? If I'm not careful, I do the same thing to you. I might make a list. Well, old Sister Lynn needs to lighten up a little bit, doesn't she? I might make a few things and check her off on those things too. And you know what it says? It says, we know that whatsoever things the law saith, they say to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. So the end result of all of that is guilty, 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 and guilty. See that? That doesn't work. That is not the way the Lord wants us to live our lives. That's not what Jesus Christ said. Now, don't get me wrong. We know that whatever things the law saith, it saith to them who are under it. And Paul says, but I'm not under that. I'm not under any legalistic system. I don't do that. I live my life by grace and mercy. That's the hallmarks of my life. And that's what we need to look to and lean toward. But there's some other things we know. Over in 1 Timothy, we know that the law is good if a man use it lawfully. Now see, the law of Moses is not bad. Like I said, that's what God told Moses. This is the way I want you to worship. This is the way I want you to be my people. These are instructions for you, for your own good, your own well-being as you travel throughout this wilderness and low ground of sin and sorrow. Those are excellent instructions, excellent rules, excellent commandments. Everything about that was good except the people who had to comply with all that. That was only not good thing. Okay? And that's why in Hebrews the word better is used. We needed something better. Good wasn't good enough. We needed better. And that's where Jesus Christ came in. But we know the law itself can be good if it's used lawfully. If it's used in moderation. If it's used in the way that it's really intended. And here's a good example I always like to give. We look at the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments were never abolished. Just because Jesus Christ died on the cross does not mean murder is now okay. Get that? Adultery is not okay. Covetousness is not okay. Taking the Lord's name in vain is not okay. None of those things are now somehow done away with. If you use the law lawfully, then it's a good thing, and we know that. We know that the law is good if a man uses it lawfully. Paul even goes on to say, one of the main purposes of the law of God is to establish moral and civil law in the land in which you live. I always cringe a little bit, we're talking about politics around the office or even back in the fellowship hall. Said, well, you can't legislate morality. What do you think you're doing? If you pass a law in the book that says it is a capital crime to commit murder, you just legislated morality. You said it's immoral to commit murder. You said that. When you pass that law, and we're all going to abide by it and enforce that law with our government and our officials, that is morality that we're enforcing right there because we said that. Now, I guarantee you, we're chipping away a little bit at God's law of morality, which is an absolute righteous standard, and which I believe this country was kind of founded on, a lot of the laws and a lot of the things there. But we've been chipping away on that for years. And there's some things, too, that were part of God's law that was used lawfully, and we brought it forward into the New Testament. That's what amazes me, is how many of the laws of God are quoted in the New Testament that says this is still wrong. Whether it was Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul, the Apostle John. It's amazing the number of things that are quoted directly out of the Old Testament that the New Testament writers and Jesus Christ says this is still enforced. And I won't go into a lot of detail, but if you read over in Romans chapter 1, it gives a whole litany of things that it says are immorally wrong, and it's part of God's law. And he's getting that based on Leviticus, by the way. He's quoting directly out of Leviticus, and he's telling you about marriage. He's telling you about the rules around marriage, the rules around relationships, back over Leviticus, where he said, and that's the rules where he says that you're not to, a man's not to take his daughter or his niece or any near kindred and vice versa, things like that. He talks about the laws of confusion That's what the Lord calls it. He says every time he lists out all these things that define what marriage is not. He says, because this causes confusion in the land. Why guarantee our land? Because they are no longer willing to adhere to some of those laws that are even taken forward. And they're called out just as directly as they can be in the New Testament, in Romans chapter 1. You read them, if you don't believe me. We are getting confused about what marriage is and what defines marriage, are we not? We're getting confused about that because we're not using the law lawfully. And we know that the law is good if it's used lawfully because it can help us define things like that. You know what else? Back in Romans chapter 7, we read that the law is spiritual. Let's read that one. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. That's another thing we know about the law of Moses, the law of commandments, the law of ordinances were contained there. Those were spiritual-based things. They had a very spiritual significance. As we go through and we like, and I love to do this. I know Brother Will too. Any old Baptist preacher worth his salt loves to preach on types and shadows out of the Old Testament. They love to preach about the law of Moses or the laws of ordinances are back there and tell you how every last detail of that tells you something about Jesus Christ. Now, if they're telling you something else, they probably don't understand the type and shadow. Because when I read all that stuff, it tells me something about Jesus Christ. It tells me something about the character, the man, the work he did, his mindset, the love that he had, all the different things about Jesus Christ. As it says over in Peter, he calls it the manifold grace of God. Means many-faceted, like a diamond that has different faces to it. Well, Jesus Christ is like that. As you read that Old Testament, you can turn that diamond, you can see different faces, and you can see it sparkle in different rocks. And that's what it does when you do that types and shadows preaching. When you do that kind of stuff out of the Old Testament, oh, we love to see our Savior in every bit of that, do we not? But we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. That's why the law is kind of bad for me, is because every time I try to adhere to those ordinances or even just what's implied spiritually, I still find myself failing at what's required. You know, Paul is not, he's just like me. Paul was OCD too. I figured that out after a while. I really did. I was like, there's nothing. At first I thought, I'm messed up. And I said, well, no, the Apostle Paul was messed up. And I'm just like him. So it's not just, I feel better about that, by the way. But he goes on, and what you read right after that, in the world of psychology, is called schizophrenia. That's what he had. He had this problem where he said, you have the Spirit of God which is in me. And it urges me and tells me what I should be doing, what satisfies that Spirit. There are things I can do that satisfies that Spirit of God. It's part of the will of God. It's part of the will of God in my life. But that's not what I do. I do the things that satisfy myself, my flesh. That's what I try to satisfy. Instead of trying to satisfy the Spirit, I try to satisfy the flesh. And there's this constant battle going on. By the way, if you read that, you understand that, which is very difficult because he talks about that warfare, then you have quickly in your life and in your mind negated any hollow log doctrine you may hear. I don't know if you know what that is. You know, all the great heresies among the old Baptists came out of Texas. I've said that 20 times. All the Texas preachers thought this up. And if they were here, they'd agree with me. Because they know. And I can name names if you wanted me to. But the hollow log doctrine was one of those. That was one of those. And the hollow log was this idea that the way they tried to describe it was the Spirit of God is like a rabbit. It's like a rabbit that just runs through a hollow log, and that's how you're born again. You know, it runs in, it runs out the other end of this hollow log. And that's all you are, some hollow log. In the words of Paul, God forbid. That's crazy talk. It is not like that at all. In fact, Paul says exactly the opposite. When the Spirit came into me, sin revived. It was by the Spirit that I knew my guilt. I knew my sin. It was the Spirit of God that convicted me of these things. It's the Spirit of God that urges me and draws me and causes me to do those things that please it, which please God. And those things are oftentimes, well, every time, are good for me. They're for my benefit and for my profit when I follow the unction of the Spirit in my life. But that's not what I do. He goes on, those are the good things for me that are good and healthy for me spiritually, but that's not what I do. I do the other things that are detrimental to both my mind and my soul. Because for some reason, I think that's pleasurable. And I guarantee you, that's the way we think too. For the law is spiritual. The law is spiritual, but I'm carnal. That's the problem we often have. Now let's go on real quickly. Let's catch a few other things. These are things that we know. We know that idols are nothing. We know that the law is spiritual. We know the law speaks to those that are under the law. We know several things. These are things the Bible tells us we know. Look at this one. We know... Let's go to Romans 8:22. We know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain until now. We know these things. This is actually good science right here. We know that the world itself is deteriorating. It's groaning and travailing in pain. Travail is the word the Bible often uses for a young lady who's about to give birth. That's travailing. I'm so thankful to see Sister Katie this morning. And I told her we've been praying for her as she's getting that time. But she tells me she's in the clear. She's ready to go. She's going to cut her meds next week and just let the Lord take over as if He's not been in control already. and let things go. And we are thankful for that. But she's been experiencing some pains that you might describe as travail. This anticipation, it's getting closer, it's getting time. It's time for that young child to arrive. You know what? We know that the whole creation travails. It's getting painful. This world and this creation is getting kind of painful as it moves on. It's getting closer for an event to occur. And that's what he's talking about. He's literally talking about that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our bodies. The whole world is waiting for the resurrection. It's waiting for the return of their Creator, Jesus Christ, when all this shall be put away and our bodies will be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of eyes. And between now and then, things are going to get worse. Things are going to go downhill. Will and I have talked about this. Even my girls have talked about how just ludicrous, how illogical the theory of evolution is versus the law of thermodynamics. Like, that sounds big. And I know Will studied this too. And like, well, you're all Georgia Tech and Berry grads. You all know this stuff. the three laws of thermodynamics basically just says something real simple. These are laws. These are laws. You cannot break the laws. These are laws of physics that cannot be broken. We've tried. We look at different ways to do this. And every once in a while, you hear somebody say, "Oh, I've broken the second law. You know, I've done that." And then we find out, no, it's a scam for money. That's all it's for. Everything traces to bad money. You don't get something for nothing. If you're gonna, anything you do, it's gonna cost you. It's gonna cost you. You don't get something for nothing. You can't break even either. You can never break even, and everything's going downhill. That's your three laws right there. Now that applies to everything. So it doesn't matter whether you build an engine or a battery. It doesn't matter if you build a power plant. It doesn't matter what you do. You don't get. There's no free ride. There's no free energy. There is no perpetual energy machine. It's going to cost you. You're going to have to drill oil out of the ground and pop into a plant. You have to burn it and to create steam. It's going to drive a turbine. It's going to give you electricity in your house, right? And there's a cost to do that. And it costs you to do that. You're going to have some beginning point of energy to do that. By the way, you don't get something for nothing. You can't even break even. So the amount of energy that you get out of the ground is not what you get in your house. You lose a little bit all along the way. It's always less than. That's why you have no such thing as a perpetual motion machine or a perpetual energy machine. It will never happen because that's a law. You cannot break it. But the last is the one that kills everybody. And everything's getting worse. Everything's going downhill. Nothing is getting better. Right. Nothing is getting better. Okay? That's a law. That is, it's law of entropy, actually. Entropy is always decreasing, always getting worse. Things are getting worse. More confusion. Less energy. Now, why is that so important? Because you can't have a theory of evolution if that's in the way. You can never get from a lower life form to a higher life form. You can never get better. That law says you can't. You just can't. So that's why it's a theory, and it's a bad theory. It's a wrong theory. But that's what it is. The whole world, we know that the whole world is going downhill, that things are getting worse. And we ourselves groan and travail waiting for that day when these old bodies will be changed finally. That's called the adoption, to wit, or that is the redemption. You know something else that we know? We know that all things work together to for good that them that love the Lord, do we not? Yeah. Now, I just put that in a different context than you've ever heard that before, because you thought this was all about all things. No, it's about what we know. That verse is about what we know. That's telling us about things that we know. Things that we can sink our teeth into. Things that we can take to the bank. Things that we can live our life by. Some laws. We know that an idol is nothing, right? We know that the law is spiritual. We know it is lawful to use it. The law is good if we use it lawfully. And we know that there are some things that work together for our good. To them that love the Lord, to them that are called according to His purpose. What are those things that we know that work for our good? There's exactly five of them. By the way, now you'll know where I stand on that issue real quick. Okay? I'm not bashful about this. Is this being recorded? Because I want you to put this on the internet so people will know. Because I don't want anybody ever come to me and say, how do you take that? How do you run that, Brother Coy? If you come up, I'll be fighting mad. Because it's like, don't you listen to stuff on the internet? Haven't you been somewhere? I'll tell you exactly what I think. I think it's those five things listed right after that. I think it's the foreknowledge of God. I think it is the predestinating grace of God. I think it's that calling of God. I think it is that justification that God had. I think it is that glorification that will occur in God's mind and purpose has already happened. I believe it's those five things. How do I know that? Because if you have those five things working together, you don't need anything else. There's nothing you need to add to that. There's nothing else in your life that needs to be added to those five things. How do I know? Because Paul said so. He goes on, if you read that, let's read that real carefully. What shall we say to these things? After he listed those five things. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. Whom he called, them he also justified. Whom he justified, them he also glorified. What shall we say to these things? These are the all things. We know that these things right here, they will work to our good no matter what. They cannot be undone. They cannot be circumvented. They cannot be negated. These five things working cooperatively together, that's all you need. And we need to know that. We need to take that one to the bank. If we know those five things and how they work together, he that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It is God that justifies. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, rather that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God, who also maketh intercession for others. Those five things guarantee your eternal destiny, your eternal home. It guarantees your eternal ownership, if you will, of God and Him alone. He who freely gave his own son, how shall he not spare anything to you? Who can lay anything to your charge? Who can accuse you of anything? Who can condemn you? Who can separate you from the love of God that's in Jesus Christ? That's what Paul's trying to tell us. These five things, if we know those things, nothing can separate us from our God. Nothing can circumvent, nothing can derail his eternal purpose of our glory with him. That's what he's trying to tell you. And not only so, he's saying these five things, it's Jesus Christ that accomplished. He's the noun that did all those verbs. Those are all verbs, and he did them all. He's the foreknower. He's the predestinator. He's the justifier. He's the glorifier. You see that? It's all predicated on him. So where is he? Well, he's sitting at the right hand of the majesty on high. He's sitting right there for one purpose and one purpose alone, to make intercession for you, to be your advocate, to let you know, and this is something we know that Jesus Christ is sitting there even now as our advocate, as our intercessor, to let God know thy people cry out to you, thy people praise you, thy people sing unto your great name, thy people hurt, thy people need thee. You see that? He's there. And those five things guarantee that will always occur. It will always happen. We know those things. Last thing that we know is in 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. Let's turn over there and we'll do that last one. I got started at 15 after, right?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Okay. Last one. Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore, the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know. We know we shall be like. We know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. There's something else we know. We don't know what it's going to be like, but we know this. When he appears, we're going to be just like him, and we're going to see him just like he is. With these very eyes, we're going to see him. We're going to see the glorified and risen Savior Jesus Christ, and we know that we're going to be just like him, that we're going to be glorified, that we're going to be raised with him, and we're going to spend eternity with him. We know those things. Those are things you can take to the bank. And my dear brothers, this is what our job is as ministers, is to tell God's children the things that we know. Tell them about the law and how it's spiritual, but tell them about those five things that Jesus Christ accomplished. Tell them those things and how that can never separate them, regardless of whether they live up to God's expectation or not, or they live up to their own legal expectations or not. I made the comment just last week, we were talking about that we're constantly seeking to have approval. Approval of others, approval of our job, approval of this, approval of that. You know, we have Facebook now that has likes. And so people compare how many likes you get on Facebook for a picture or a comment or something like that. I don't have Facebook. I don't like any of that stuff, actually. It's good to communicate some things, but I just can't get involved in all that. But I'll tell you this. If I did have Facebook, there's really only one like that I need. Now, the rest of you, I don't care what you think. There's only one like, and that's Jesus Christ. And here's what I know. He already did it. He already gave me a like before the world began. Before the foundation of the world, he gave me the like. He gave me a thumbs up. He said, you're mine. I've foreknown you. I've predestinated you. I've elected you. I will call you. I will justify you. And finally, I will glorify you. That's a like. That's a like on Facebook. And we know those things. Come ahead, Brother Will.
What a